We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, I'm joined by our managing editor at the Federalist, Madeline Osborne. Madeline, thanks so much for taking the time to chat today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here with you, Emily.
I'm sure you are. Well, on the occasion of Sheryl Sandberg's departure from Meta, which you probably know as Facebook, Madeline penned something of a eulogy for the lean-in era that I found poignant and really well-timed. Madeline has a story up on the Federalist right now called "The Lean-In Era is Over," and that's good for everyone. Now, not to do too long of a wind-up here, but I really think it's important to just remember, it's hard to overstate what a huge cultural moment Lean In's release was. That's a book that Sheryl Sandberg wrote and published. I want to say it was 2014. It may have been 2013. And there were like Lean In book clubs all over the country.
They were more like support groups.
Support groups.
Like corporate support groups. But yeah, it was a bit much. It was cringe.
It was super cringe. But at the time, I think it's really important to remember, at the time, this was being treated as a real sign of progress for women. This was, I think it actually became almost a demand. Those two words, lean in, I really think it became almost a demand. But Madeline, a lot of times, you know, a person will leave their post, but that doesn't mean their sort of broader movement is over. And yet here you're eulogizing the lean in era. You have declared it dead. Let's start with that first part of your headline. The lean in era is over. Why did you come to that conclusion?
I think it's really interesting. The things I associate the lean-in era with are obviously the Obama years, the Hillary Clinton pantsuit, kind of popularity, people yes-girling her for that. Just like this weird kind of like corporate feminism that wasn't about being subversive like feminism used to be, but more just like solely focused on climbing the corporate ladder, which I think is interesting because it was kind of like Sheryl Sandberg just assumed that's what all women wanted, was to like be the next Facebook CEO, and kind of roped in the women in her lean in support groups to like pursue these same, you know, I'm going to be a high powered lawyer, I'm going to be a high powered tech executive goals. And just kind of like lost a lot of nuance for what actually brings women happiness. And I think we've realized that it's not being 100%, having the same goals as men, right? Like obviously being equal with men, but we don't have the same, desires and like lifestyle choices as men. And yet that's kind of how Sheryl Sandberg approached her like weird Obama era feminism. I don't know if you would agree with that, but
she would approach, wait, say that last part again. How she approached her feminism was that every woman, with this assumption that what women really want is to work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I think that's completely true. And I think it's why the legacy media's coverage on women's issues is always so completely skewed, because they miss the really important part of when you ask mothers in particular, which Sheryl Sandberg is a mother, what their ideal work situation looks like. It's a fraction. It's probably around a third who say their ideal work situation is to be full time at an office.
Right. Versus like Sheryl Sandberg was devoting her book and her manifesto, I guess, towards basically like lamenting how hard it is to be a woman in the workplace, and basically these inner mental challenges that women, you know, things like imposter syndrome or just these barriers, she would call them barriers that exist within ourselves that we need to overcome, you know, just like lacking in self-confidence,
you know, being intimidated by being the only woman in the room. So like these types of things, just about like how hard it is to be a woman at a Fortune 500 company. And I feel like that's just like starting the conversation at the wrong place. Like you're like assuming that that's what women's want for their lives, right? Is to be like her, to be, and that's totally fine if some women do, but basically no, she wrote no. this she wrote this whole book with the assumption that like that is what true equality is, or that's what true success is. And like you said, if you actually look at polling, if you actually talk to women, that's not really where they find their happiness.
So to answer the actual question that I asked you, I'm going to quote from your article. You write, although women have been waking up to the false promises of third wave feminism since Sandberg hit the bestsellers list, COVID lockdowns were the nail in the coffin of the girl boss era. As I've written about before, nearly 2 million women have left the labor force entirely since February 2020, a 33-year record low. And just in, Madeline, that sort of intangible feeling of where the culture is right now in 2022 versus where it was in 2013, 2014, the Obama era, when Silicon Valley was on the ascent. It was seen as still a place full of hope and promise that was lifting America to new heights. You know, people saw a Clinton presidency on the horizon. It was the height of just corporate neoliberalism,
right.
It does truly feel like we're at a different time. And Sheryl Sandberg, I don't think, has gotten as friendly of a send-off from the media as you may have expected her to have, given the way she was treated when Lean In came out.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, it's really, you know, normally when people retire or go on to their next venture, there's kind of like some reflection on like, oh, look at like what all they accomplished. And absolutely, she accomplished a lot for Facebook. She made them extremely profitable. But if you just for years now, this is not just like a new thing, although like I said, COVID was, you know, the nail in the coffin. For years now, women have been reflecting back on some very specific points of Sandberg's advice, saying like, actually, that was really out of touch, and that was really like she didn't read the room, kind of, on a lot of her advice, for basically saying, you know, how leaning in is not as easy or as practical as she makes it seem in her book.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And that was very much, there were a lot of critiques. You note this in your piece. There were critiques of Sandberg from the left at the time, right?
Right, exactly. So the feminists and people on the left were saying like, well, she's not addressing issues of inequality. You know, how can she suggest? I read this book when in 2013, 2014, when it came out, when I was in college.
Oh, you've actually read Lean In.
Oh, yeah.
Cover to cover.
My mom bought it for me.
My mom read it as well.
I remember reading it when I was in college. And I remember even the giant kind of, which is normal for books of this caliber, but like the giant PR campaigns that went along with it. Like, do you remember the hashtag ban bossy movement?
Oh yeah,
that's from Lean In. That's from this book. I think there's a whole chapter on about like why we should ban the word bossy, because it's like offensive to say that girls are being bossy when really they're just being leaders.
I do remember that now that you say it, and it's another great artifact of that era in our culture, which our culture changes so quickly now, because in the span of, you know, time, it's really been a short period from then to now. But that was, I mean, even that feels weird right now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And like, so
it's so cringe.
It's so cringe.
Corporate drivel to sell a multimillionaire's book about herself.
But women loved it. They ate it up. They truly ate it up. But anyway, some of the critiques were like,
women be shopping.
A lot of the critiques were like, you know, she's not addressing the, especially like women of color and Black women, like they don't have, they can't afford extra childcare. That she literally suggested that. She was like, you should get a nanny and a housekeeper so that you can work longer hours at the office, which is, I don't know if that's tone deaf. I don't know what it is, but anyway, so those were some of the critiques. And even Michelle Obama, in when she wrote her book a couple years ago and was on this big book tour, she was kind of pushing back on that and literally saying like that lean in stuff doesn't always work. So yeah, there's been a lot of critiques, but all that to say, COVID, so there's been critiques leading up to it, but I think what the data, if you should look at the data and what the data is showing us now, and this is a lot mostly driven because of COVID and the way that lockdowns took jobs away from women and made them reprioritize their lives in ways that they weren't expecting. Thanks to COVID, basically everything that Sheryl Sandberg fought for is dead.
Explain that more.
So if you look at, so let's start with like teachers unions, right? They shut down schools for years and women are basically forced with making decisions about, are they going to continue to try to like homeschool their kids while working? A lot of them chose not to. A lot of them chose to just like homeschool full time. And these are women that would have never been homeschooling before. They were, you know, mostly happy in their jobs. Or maybe they just chose to reduce their hours. A lot of them couldn't justify the rising costs of childcare, eating up like what paycheck they had. And so because the numbers didn't make sense, they just quit. And so that's how we have this 33-year low of women being in the workforce that you mentioned. On top of that, we have this new data out just this last week from the CDC that's showing there actually was a spike in birth rates last year in 2021. And
which is that's not keeping with the recent pattern.
No, that's like insane, because if you anyone who's watched the news the last couple of years has been like declining birth rate. Why is no one having babies? We're kind of freaking out because we're below replacement rates. So to see this spike in birth rates is actually like, wow, like that's really notable. So some people, one guy that I quoted in my piece, Lyman Stone, he did some research on trying to figure out, you know, what may have caused that spike in birth rates. And he did a bunch of polling of American women ages 18 to 44. Lyman Stone, he polled 3,000 women ages 18 to 44 to try to look at the data and see, you know, what caused this year 2021 spike in birth rates. Was it just that women and men were home more together? was it just like the physical closeness? So he did some polling on that and for aspects of fertility in general. But the one that really stuck out to me was measuring how women were satisfied with their family and how it was associated with whether they were working, whether they were working remotely, or whether they were not working at all. And women who had the option to work remotely or women who were not working at all showed higher rates of satisfaction with their family than women who were employed but did not have the option to work remotely. So I know that's like a lot of kind of wonky data and stuff to kind of take in, but basically how that relates back to Lean In is like Sheryl Sandberg painted this picture of like women, you know, she talked about pump nursing while she was on conference calls in her office, which now women are like, why would I go to the office and pump? Like, I should just stay home with my baby and like, you know, hop onto my Zoom call later or something. You know, we don't have to do that anymore. Where she painted this picture of like sitting at the tables, like the big thing she talked about, you know, you want to lean in, you want to be the one raising your hand, you want to be in the meeting with all the other corporate men, and you want to be like, have the confidence to speak up and like not think you're an imposter. And these are just types of things that don't really apply anymore to this world of like the remote work options that women have now. Basically, COVID kind of changed all those dynamics and made her advice just really not seem applicable.
Cancel culture is coming to your bank, and holding the wrong political views might soon leave you out in the cold. I'm Bill Walton. On the latest episode of The Bill Walton Show, Todd Zwicky, Paul Watkins, and I discuss what is already happening, how the Biden administration is already pursuing this agenda, and what we can do about it. This progressive culture offensive is relentless. It's coming for you, and you won't hear about this anywhere else. Follow The Bill Walton Show at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, first of all, brief intermission. As I've said before, I'll say it again. We read all of your emails, reviews, comments, and we love them and appreciate them. Appreciate all the feedback. Please, I'm begging you, do not send us any feedback on this episode that includes a lamentation about how often the word like is used. It is entirely Madeline's fault.
I'm sorry.
I can't handle it.
It's my verbal tick. You'll have to deal with it.
No, my verbal tick is saying, but that's not as stigmatized. It's not as stigmatized as it is for, geez, I keep doing it. You never can identify your verbal ticks because it gets worse. But geez, I can't keep doing it. Madeline, we're going to just keep rolling on through so that I don't have another moment.
I'll go and edit out all the likes.
Yeah. No, you won't. You're too lazy these days. No, you have too much editing to manage, actually.
I know. It's got a lot going on.
Well, okay. So a lot going on there, but it gets back to what you were saying about how Sheryl Sandberg has this expectation for what women want, which is to be breastfeeding while they're on conference calls. And that is one of the central, that image alone is a really good one. There are other things I imagine that you can remember from the book that similarly encouraged people to prioritize work while they were prioritizing child rearing. And that expectation, it sort of brings us to this question of why do people think that's what women want? You know, that's truly the deeper question to me is what has convinced the left, even this is like the establishment left, and it also applies as a kind of a rare situation where what the establishment left believes applies to the fringe activist progressive left. Why is it they think women want to be breastfeeding on conference calls, that they want to be on those conference calls so badly that they should be blending these two parts of their lives in ways that are not convenient?
I think they just have skewed, I'm just thinking out loud here, but I think they just have skewed definitions of what equality with men means. Fighting for true equality, tell me what right a man has right now that a woman doesn't have. I can't think of anything. And I think their vision is like, well, you know, there's not as many women on the board seats and there's not as many women in the C-suite. And so that means there's not true equality. And they just never stop to think that maybe the reason is not that there's not women that are smart enough or have opportunity or have the same degrees or have the opportunity to have the same, make the amount of the same amount of money. All those are there. It's just that women aren't choosing them. And I think that's kind of where they conflate equality with basically what women actually want. I don't know.
I think that's completely it. That equality means, and by the way, they believe these, Sheryl Sandberg is a proponent of this idea that if companies are 50-50 male female, they will be better. And
sure, that would be the counter argument.
The evidence for that is actually mixed too, which is an interesting question in and of itself, and it doesn't have any bearing.
Well, you know what's come of that philosophy is now that women aren't getting longer maternity leave, men are just getting longer paternity leave. Right? That's honestly how that's shaking out, because they're saying that, I have several friends that work for huge companies that have their husbands have 16 weeks of paternity leave and they have 8 weeks of maternity leave at their company. And it's because the argument, I guess, is that if a woman at said big company has to step back for 12, 16 weeks, then any other man should also have to do that, I guess, is their way of making it equal. Because then I guess they think that taking off maternity leave is going to set you back in your career or your job or your role or whatever. And so they're trying to set men back by giving them months off of work. I don't know.
I remembered a right that men have that women don't.
Oh, what's that?
The right to be drafted. Oh my
God. Not for long.
Honestly. Yeah, right.
Thanks to Marsha Blackburn.
Oh, Oh, I'm going to get emails about that. All right. That's okay. Email Madeline. Madeline at the Federalist. That's what you get. So there is something I want to keep probing, though, which is how before the pandemic, like let's rewind to 2020 and pretend this massive disruption to work culture and family life never happened. I still think hashtag ban bossy and lean in and girl boss was becoming cringe. And as we're having this conversation, I'm thinking, I wonder if that's partially because the sort of Trump era, the post-Obama reckoning, really for a lot of people, even if it didn't happen for the media, but for a lot of just regular people around the country, the establishment, the political cultural establishment was exposed. It was kind of an emperor has no clothes moment. So when they pushed these things, they completely lack the seriousness and credibility that they used to have.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It kind of just came across as silly. Kind of like, what are we doing here? Banning the word bossy. I think you're right. It was definitely an emperor has no clothes moment.
Mm-hmm. And equality, I also think that you're correct. The deeper issue here is that for the feminist left, and this is actually why abortion is such a central, some people would say foundational pillar of the contemporary left. And Madeline, this is completely, I think, I tweeted this when her departure was announced, Sandberg's departure was announced. Like, she explicitly tied it to perhaps Roe being overturned. And it's like, well, yeah, it's a lot easier to lean in when you can get an abortion. And there's always been, since the 60s, and it was bubbling up before that, but there's always been this idea that equality, as you said, necessarily means women should be participating in every aspect of society in equal numbers and should be treated as the same as men, whether that's in the draft, whether that's with their ability to have sex and not deal with a pregnancy. This all is connected.
Yeah, and I think, again, we talked about this earlier, but it's worth going down the rabbit hole. Like, no, the media and our politicians aren't asking what women want, because when you poll what women want, it's not very feminist. It's not very PC. Like, what women want is more flexibility. You know, there's a whole conversation to be had about childcare in this country and how we should meet the massive need for childcare for all these women who have degrees and advanced degrees now that they didn't used to have. And find themselves needing to work to pay for them. And anyways, all that to say, when you actually poll women on how their ideal form of childcare would be, it's not 100% daycare. It's not 100% government funded Head Start programs, putting your kid in daycare from the ages of 2 or 3, which is insane. It's
really, do you think that I turned out all right?
there's some questions, but I'm just saying it's not about like, I'm not talking about like daycare. I'm talking about the government funded, like let's start putting in kids in government schools before pre-K, right?
Learn about gender identity.
Who knows what they're pushing at that age. But basically what women actually want is just flexibility. Sure, like women obviously need childcare to get work done. I certainly do. But they also still want to have the flexibility to not have that full-time childcare, to be home and to do some of their own child rearing and to be the primary caregiver for their kids. And that's not a very like woke, feminist messaging. It's also going back to the earlier critique. It doesn't always apply to what people say of like the, what was the critique that I was talking about earlier? Oh, you know, issues of inequality, you know, not we're only going to all be equal if every woman can send all of their kids to full-time daycare, you know, right away. That message of what women actually want, which is to actually have some control over how their kids are raised doesn't line up with that messaging.
We've really compartmentalized our lives in very kind of novel ways when you think about it. Child rearing is a pretty good example. And one thing, of course, we've glossed over in a way I think would reasonably be a complaint of the left is that women should have a sense of financial independence. And this gets to how the social fabric has been utterly torn in every way. We can have that conversation, and it's an important one. I think the reason a lot of women at least crave some level of part-time work, why a lot of mothers at least crave some level of part-time work, is because they want to have the security. If something were to happen in their marriage, if something were to happen, whatever, they want to feel financially secure and capable. But that's also opening up a can of worms, even though the left wouldn't bring it up. It's opening up a can of worms about divorce culture, about, I shouldn't say divorce culture because that frames it negatively, but the way we approach marriage and the way we approach sex, that you should, and this again brings up abortion, that you should be able to have casual sex and not deal with the outcome of what we know sex does.
That or you should... even just trying to destigmatize single women choosing to get a sperm donor and have yes. children outside of marriage.
Freeze your eggs. I mean, how many companies offer that as a benefit now? I mean, big companies where women have leaned in and probably were extremely receptive to a book like Sandberg's. This is, you know, in a way, this is a really serious tragedy. Just the case study of Sheryl Sandberg, that this multimillionaire Silicon Valley executive who was actively foisting a destructive product on the country was also then given free publicity and uncritical publicity by the corporate media, by the legacy media, to use that power, her financial power, her power in business, to level this cultural power and to amass this cultural power based on a very destructive notion that I think right. women quickly have realized, again, like this has happened pretty quickly, have realized that it was a lie.
And I think that that's a perfect segue to kind of like where I ended my piece, which is basically saying the irony here is that Sheryl Sandberg, her book was about, and what she basically campaigned on and stood for was in a way standing up to big corporate, right? You know, we're going to get more women in the boardroom and we're going to change it. We're going to change this for all women. And we're just going to stick it to big corporate that, you know, women should be here too. And in doing that, she basically made it easier for big corporate to kind of not abuse women, but like take advantage of their labor and basically say, yeah, we want you to work yes. long hours and we want you to pay for a housekeeper and a babysitter and not be home with your children because we're exploiting you and we're benefiting by you working more. And I think that's kind of the sad and disgusting irony of the whole thing.
I think the reason I ended up in journalism is that I'm just so skeptical of absolutely everything. It's like a reflex. And so when the good folks over at MyPillow offered to send some towels my way, I was immediately skeptical. I thought, there's so much hype here. Can they live up to it? Nothing beats the feel of a luxurious towel when you step out of the shower. And I'm telling you, this is not scripted right here. These really work. They're very, very absorbent. I got them in a nice blue color, so you can also wrap yourself in nothing but the best with the MyPillow towel set. Other towels feel good but don't absorb, or they absorb but they're scratchy and just don't feel good. Every MyPillow towel is made from proprietary technology that makes them highly absorbent and soft to the touch, but without that lotiony feel. Plus, with a 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try them for yourself and return them if you're not fully satisfied. Made with cotton grown here in the U.S. and available in a variety of colors, each towel set comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and a washcloth two-pack. So for a limited time, get the MyPillow six-piece towel set regularly $109.99 for only $39.99 with promo code Federalist. Visit MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. You'll also find deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow Giza Dream Sheets, and so much more. Get your six-piece MyPillow towel set for only $39.99 today at MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. Visit MyPillow.com/Federalist today. Yeah, that's a really good point. It makes you a widget, and it makes you a better widget for companies to monetize when you can be as efficient of a cog in the wheel as men are. And this is the thing people get wrong about the wage gap. People like Sheryl Sandberg get this wrong about the wage gap. She thinks you can... First of all, she'll say the wage gap is unfair, I'm sure, although it actually amounts to about, as I'm sure most of our listeners know, 6 or 7 cents on the dollar that you can't really account for. We don't know that 100% of that is any type of sex discrimination. But we do know that when you account for women's different choices, you can get pretty much everything except for that last 6 to 7 cents in there. So somebody like Sheryl Sandberg will lament that and then at the same time argue women need to close the wage gap by breastfeeding on conference calls and putting their kids in daycare against their wishes and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just so, it's all so backwards and illogical, but it's essential logic if you've bought into this idea that equality means like literal sameness.
Right. And going back to your point earlier about, you know, the left's argument would be, well, if we just had more women, if we had 50% women and 50% men in every company and every board, then it would be more family friendly. It's not. But if it were, what that would look like is corporations giving women more remote work or more flexibility, more ability to be home with their children or to pursue, you know, the type, just the ability to have kids, you know. And versus like Sheryl Sandberg saying, like, don't really like think about having kids until you don't leave or anticipate having kids until you really have to. That's also a chapter in her book is titled Don't Leave Before You Leave, basically saying like, don't try to like plan ahead until you're pregnant. But basically all that to say is like if corporations truly wanted to meet women with what their actual desires are, it would look more like, frankly, our jobs, you know, to have the flexibility that we have. And yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that, but you get what I mean.
No, you're talking about my 7 children and how easy it is.
No, I'm saying, I don't want to sound out of touch because not everyone can just be an internet keyboard warrior like we are.
But I think companies should
be more accommodating to women, yeah, to families and to children. And well, I think in every way in our society, we're putting children last.
Yeah, we are very much the Federalist is very much a family first company, an organization is that like everybody's first priority is God, family and country, like in that order. And work is, you know, it fits into that list of priorities, but does not come above God or family. And there are ways to make life work really well for women who want, for good reason, financial independence, because we do exist in this sort of broken culture. And Blake Masters has the Trump endorsed Senate candidate in Arizona has the most feminist proposal of any candidate that I can think of at the moment, which is that you should have, you should be able to, he ran an ad last year early in the primary. By the way, he's wrote 0 to 1 with Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel obviously is very involved with Facebook for a long time. Blake Masters put out an ad last year that said, you should be able to raise a family on a single income.
Absolutely.
That's the most feminist thing that you can say right now, that you should feel secure. I think it would be great if you even went further, although I understand for political reasons why you can't, and said, you know, a husband should be able to support a family on a single income, because that's what, it's not politically correct, but that is what the majority of men and women want to do.
Right. Exactly. No, that was an amazing ad. And it ticked people off and you knew it was right over the target because of the left's reaction to it. But that truly is what most people want. Why should we have to fall into the two income trap? It's horrible for husbands, wives, and children.
Explain the two income trap.
Well, basically you work your way up to earning so much that you both have to work. Right. Your expenses are that high, basically, to afford childcare. And
Elizabeth Warren wrote at length about this.
I didn't realize it was her thing.
Yeah. In the mid-aughts. And it's, again, the preferences of women, which I guess maybe the feminist left would still argue are being programmed by a patriarchal culture, although I don't know how you could possibly make that case at this point unless you're talking about the patriarchy's desire for legalized abortion on demand. If you're talking about that, sure, well, this is a patriarchy. But otherwise, I feel like if anything, the culture is conditioning people, as we've talked about, in this lean-in society where the height, and this gets into how we approach education. I remember in my high school and my entire public school education, which was sort of straddling the boundaries between the outskirts, the Milwaukee suburbs, and more rural areas, everything was about college. And the message was that you're a failure if you don't go to college, mm-hmm. that college is what worthwhile high school graduates do. And I'm sure most of our listeners have had similar experiences in the messaging that comes down from our school system, our education system. And it is a total lie, but it's why you have highly educated people like Sheryl Sandberg saying this is the goal. The goal is to keep ascending. When you leave high school, the next best step is not marriage. It's not working your way up to buying a house and starting a family. It is college. And then when you leave college, it is work. And when you get into work, it is continuing to push and push and push until you are an executive of a major publicly traded social media company, right? Like, this
doesn't
apply.
You gotta stay on the hamster wheel, Emily. Stay on the hamster wheel.
And the end, like, and I guess, you know, at the time, some people may have said, well, at least she thinks women should have babies. Right? Like, well,
yeah, that's true. I mean, I tried to give her credit for that. She did, you know, have some, you know, she tried to say women are stay-at-home working mom is a full-time job too, that kind of line. She threw those in there, and she is a working mom herself. And she even post lean in, I don't know what year it is, after her husband died, that was kind of a big a public thing, but her husband died and she had two kids, and she admitted, you know, I didn't realize how hard it was
to be a single mom
and how hard it was to actually, you know, lean in at work when you are underwater at home. You know, those two things do have an effect on each other.
I mean, yeah. And I don't think the lean in was ever presented as something that would apply to you know, absolutely every single woman at every stage of career development.
No, it didn't. But at the same time, college students like me were reading
it. Right. And I think it.
And I'm not a tech executive, so it didn't work, I guess.
Oh, Bedford should lean in. Tech executive Chris Bedford.
He's leaning in right now.
The Sheryl Sandberg of the right. Many people have said that.
Oh my god, me or Bedford?
No, definitely not you.
Oh dang,
no, you're too unorganized about it.
I'd get canceled. I'm already canceled.
you should be canceled. If anything, it's too late for you to be canceled. And actually, that reminds me, Molly just said in our staff signal, she reminded me that today is our friend Bree Payton's birthday, frequent host of Federalist Radio Hour. And I am so confident that if Bree were here with us right now, she would be right with me saying Madeline should be canceled. Hashtag cancel Madeline. We would get it trending.
If Bree were here, she'd be ranting about Elon Musk right now.
Well, you know what she probably would be ranting about is actually the Gwyneth Paltrow, Kourtney Kardashian, Goop, Poosh collaboration, which seems to have really attracted a good deal of your attention, Madeline. What do you think of that? Why?
I mean, that's a bit of an overstatement. But...
No.
So I'll explain it quickly. Gwyneth Paltrow. So, okay.
as she just like melts into a vocal fry, I'll explain it quickly. Gwyneth Paltrow.
I'm realizing I have to back up even further to understand the full scope of this story. Courtney, when Gwyneth Paltrow started Goop, she specifically talked about how companies that have two O's in their names are more successful.
And that's Google, Yahoo.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that is partially why she chose the name Goop. Huge success. Decade later, Kourtney Kardashian, a Gwyneth Paltrow wannabe, gets really into health, fitness, vegan, matcha, decides she, you know, after years for being tormented by her sisters, for being the only sister that doesn't have a real business or job, decides hers is going to be a health, fitness, lifestyle blog. She debuts it. It's called Poosh, P-O-O-S-H.
Horrible name. An obvious Goop knockoff where you have a celebrity face attached to a lifestyle website that peddles its wares. That are just sort of like high class
bizarre stuff, sticking crystals in your vagina, that kind of stuff. Just
speaking of which,
speaking
of vagina,
so you would think that this might cause some kind of, you know, I don't know, rift between GP and Kourtney Kardashian, but apparently not, because so also back up, Gwyneth Paltrow a couple years ago started getting a lot of attention for making these candles that were very I don't know, subversive, the right word. There would be she would call them things like, this smells like my vagina, or this smells like my orgasm. Just to get a rise out of people. And they're obviously bestsellers. People love them. So Kourtney Kardashian and Gwyneth Paltrow this last week come out with a collab, which is slang for collaboration on a project, on their own candle. And I think they just have one out. I forget what it's, is it just the smells like Kourtney Kardashian's vagina?
I think that's what it's called.
I think it's that, but I think there are more to come. And this is a scoop I haven't reported yet, and I haven't seen reported anywhere else.
I think you're the only one with this.
You heard it here first. I was watching Architectural Digest house tour of Travis Barker's Calabasas home, and on his nightstand was another Kourtney Goop candle collab of an unreleased scent. I think it's called like, this smells like Kourtney Kardashian's orgasm or something, so not really that surprising, but I don't think that was supposed to be shown, and Architectural Digest spoiled it, and I'm the only one who's noticed so far. So I think that's the one that's coming out next.
This entire segment of the conversation was just you like doing one big verbal back pat for yourself, just leading up to your scoop.
And our viewers thank me for it.
So Gwyneth Paltrow and Kourtney Kardashian are also actually kind of in the girl boss conversation.
That's really true.
Yeah, and it's why Goop and Poosh, and just I remember when Poosh launched, Madeline, we wrote
an
article.
I'm honestly shocked that I can't say it's been a success because I don't know who reads it and what their numbers are, but it's still around and it's still going, so clearly I guess it is some sort of success. And I'm surprised, like it's really bad if you read the content.
Yeah, I've actually taken some cues from Goop in terms of like makeup and
tell
vacations. Just like they have good travel content, but not vacations that I've taken.
That's like saying you read vacations I've for the wanted. Articles.
Well, I truly
Goop for the travel logs.
I truly am like very amused by Goop to the point where I go on it, and then sometimes it's like, actually this I'm trying to think of it. There's a brand of jeans that I started buying because I saw them. Anyway, this is beside the point.
You've said too much.
I've spent way too much money on jeans. I don't think I've ever bought anything directly from the Goop website, although as I said that sentence, I realized it's not true. So moving on. I am deeply amused by Goop. They had an article a couple of years back that was something about the best restaurants to for this summer in the Hamptons. And it was sponsored content straight up from Cartier.
Oh my gosh.
And so I honestly, sometimes it's so funny. It's very funny.
But all that to say, I think the point you're making is Goop is actually interesting and entertaining versus Poosh is just desperate and sad. She'll post recipes for avocado toast, and I'm sorry if you need a recipe for avocado toast, you have other serious issues in your life. Or it'll be a recipe for a cucumber salad, and it's just chop up cucumbers or something. I don't know, it's just ridiculous.
Speaking of avocado toast and girl bosses, Taylor Lorenz, one of her early Washington Post writer Taylor Lorenz, who we should actually, it's probably, I was in, long story short, I was in northern Mexico and the Rio Grande Valley this week doing a story with our colleague John Daniel Davidson on the tragedy unfolding really in Mexico, northern Mexico in particular, and all throughout Central America with the migration crisis. And I was watching the whole Washington Post saga unfold. We could do an entire episode on the Washington Post saga on what was going on with Taylor Lorenz and Dave Weigel and Felicia Sanmez. Just briefly, I'll just say I'll say this in three sentences. Taylor Lorenz lied and wrote fake news. Dave Weigel retweeted a funny joke. Felicia Sanmez got offended. Another Washington Post writer. Dave gets suspended for a month. He had previously questioned whether cancel culture exists and supported Felicia Sanmez. But the intersection between those two issues is that I was watching it go down and it was just really, we're spending way too much time on this. I get that it's important. It has major implications. So that's generally how I feel about Taylor Lorenz and these media stories in general. They are hilarious and we should laugh at them and we should learn from them. But I do feel like there's too much of it in media, because the biggest bias people have when they work in news is just simply working in news, and it shows in stories like these.
No, it's that, and this is someone else's take I saw on Twitter, I can't remember who, but the best takeaway from all of this is that the way that the Post handled it, you can tell, is completely based on Twitter reactions, right? You can tell if they only care about the Twitter and the journal class, otherwise they wouldn't have handled it the way that they've handled it, right? Because they wouldn't be responding to Felicia what's her face like they have been if Twitter wasn't basically their only audience.
I think they're concerned about their newsroom, and their newsroom is their Twitter audience. So the people who work in the newsroom of the Washington Post, the New York Times and Time and LA Times and wherever are typically the same people they're as their audience on Twitter. They have the same cultural, social, political leanings. And I actually really think this was an attempt to placate somebody who is highly litigious, like Felicia Sanmez, who's already taken legal action against the Washington Post in the past.
Yeah.
And to placate her allies. So I do think they're trying to smooth over the newsroom. All that is to say, my idea to do a whole episode on this was probably misplaced. And, it's a good reminder when you're talking to people who, say they've been kidnapped by cartels to get into this amazing country, not to squander it with our microphones in the media by talking about ad nauseum about media stories. The media is, I think, the central problem in our country. I feel like if the media dropped the pretense of neutrality, we would just be able to actually talk about other things. We can't talk about them until we deal with the filter of the media being completely broken and corrupt. But all that is to say, this is we live wonderful lives, and there are a lot of our problems won't be solved by making fun of Taylor Lorenz and Dave Weigel and Felicia Sanmez.
Yeah, you should. I think you need to spend more time in Mexico. It will keep you grounded.
I think you just missed an opportunity to tell me to spend more time in Texas.
No, just Mexico.
I had a Whataburger for the first time.
Oh, what'd you have?
I got a double, whatever John got. I got a double number two with cheese. That's what I got.
Was it good?
Yeah, I liked it. And I wouldn't try the Dr. Pepper shake that was being advertised ever. I love Dr. Pepper and I love milkshakes, but I refused to try that. That was sort of like a bridge too far.
Honestly, I don't love Whataburgers, but I love their breakfast and I love all their other sandwiches. So that's what I would have suggested. You get like a patty melt or Monterey melt. Those would have been better options. Mm.
Interesting. Well, I was there for the classic. I wanted to be able to judge and compare it to In-N-Out, to Culver's, to Shake Shack, which is just Culver's, but a less good version. All that is to say, Madeline, we've really let the winds of this conversation blow us to the point where we're now reviewing fast food burgers.
That's fine. That's a good sign of a good podcast.
Typical girl boss behavior. But just to tie a bow on all this, Gwyneth Paltrow and Kourtney Kardashian, Kourtney in particular, has used the fact that she is a businesswoman as a key part of her brand over the last half decade. And I think it's because it became this ideal to be a working mom. Mm. And that was a celebrity who was a substantial, as for women, female celebrities, to have a substantial business presence. And so it's a softer girl boss culture then
but
lean in.
That it kind of is a perfect example though, because she got bullied into it. You know, there's that you're talking about Kourtney Kardashian. That's a major plot point in a lot of Kardashian seasons, that Kourtney basically feels bullied because she was the only sister that didn't have a quote unquote job. And that's why she started Poosh and now is, you know, able to claim this working mom title. But for the longest time, I think there is an episode where she says, like, I just want to be a mom. Yes. I want to be with my kids.
Yes.
And it goes back to our original point, like, what do women really want? Do they really want to be a girl boss? Well, Kourtney Kardashian felt like she needed to be to keep up with her sisters, but that's not really what she wanted.
Yeah, I think the Sandberg departure is part of a vibe shift, and the vibe shift, whether it actually turns into something serious and substantial, as opposed to just us all getting a sense that what's old is new or whatever, that we're sort of retiring the Obama era and the COVID era, and everything has been shaken to the point where the foundation is gone and where there's a sort of cultural spring happening. Whether it turns into that, I don't know, but it does seem pretty clearly that COVID and the Trump era just sort of shattered our trust as a culture and all of these institutions, and people are doing, what they feel like is best for themselves. I think are turning locally more, hopefully are turning locally more. I would have way more hope for the future if freaking Facebook and Instagram didn't exist, because they are slot machines in our pockets on which we conduct our personal business, our personal lives, and our actual business and all of these other things. So I still feel like that's the massive variable here. But I think, Madeline, that sense that there's a sort of spring happening is very real, and the death of the girl boss is very much part of it.
Yeah, I'm here for the vibe shift. I think you're right. We're on to one.
Oh, well, Madeline, this has been a thoroughly invigorating conversation. So thank you very much for your time. And seriously, this is a great piece.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray. Happy birthday, Bree.